Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Matt Deacon. On the show this week, how dependent is the UK on the streamers and Hollywood? MPs have been hearing the evidence. Also on the programme, Channel 4 say they are picking up the pace on commissions, but is it enough? All that plus Jamie Lang has big podcast ambitions, a rare win for local radio, and in the media quiz, we weigh up the good news from the bad. That's all coming up on this edition of the Media Podcast. In the news this week, ITV's lineup for I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here is shaping up nicely. Alongside Nigel Farage, you may have missed Britney Spears' sister, journalist Grace Dent, and EastEnders actress Danielle Harold. The first episode's on Sunday. Two more complaints have been made to the BBC against comedian Russell Brand when he hosted a Radio 2 show. This brings the total number of complaints against him to the broadcaster to five. Brand has been publicly accused of rape and sexual assault allegations, things that he denies. And The Wickers is now accepting submissions for next year's Podcast Pitch Award. The winner will receive £5,000 towards production and the runner-up gets £2,000. The deadline to submit your ideas is the 25th of February. Now joining me at the London Podcast Studios, we have, making her media podcast debut, it's the media leader's Ella Sagar. Hello.
Hi.
Lovely to have you here. Now the Hollywood strikes are over and the impact is only now starting to be felt, particularly in the lack of new shows being released. But there's been like lots of impacts because of the writer's strike. How's it impacted some of the glossy ads that we see around London?
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting idea of, obviously, the films and TV productions being delayed would impact obvious things, TV, cinema, streamers. But I thought Out of Home, which is one of my beats, would also be affected. Mm. I did a little digging into this and they kind of found that there were minor declines for for Clear Channel UK, and it was flat year-on-year media entertainment for the first half of the year. But what from the agency sources I was speaking to, they were saying actually next year is going to be where you see that real impact, and that's going to be across all media. So I know we are used to the glossy ads on buses, on the tubes, on IMAX, and there's lots of TV series and other films either being cancelled even when they're kind of completely finished or being pushed back, and that is maybe not so much like a no revenue kind of everyone panic situation, but like it might just be pushed down the road. So there's that adding on to the uncertainty that's already in the ad market.
We love a bit of media uncertainty. And also joining us down the line, I think from Falmouth, is Deadline's Jake Cantor. Hi, Jake.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Are you on a big investigations or are you just on your holes?
I'm not in Falmouth. It's just a reminder of my university days, that poster. So, which is always welcome. Digging away on stuff as always. The strike has been keeping us very busy. Unfortunately, it's had a significant impact here in the UK. You know, when America sneezes, Britain gets a cold. But people are very relieved that it's over and are looking forward to getting back to work because, you know, it has significantly impacted production here in the UK. And I don't think we're going to see a full return to strength until the new year.
Well, you've been busy working on some investigations, particularly around Arts Ed, which I guess if viewers and listeners don't know, is it's like a college for drama students, isn't it? And there's been a bit of trouble there.
That's right. It's a very highly esteemed drama school. Former alumni include Julie Andrews and Catherine Zeta-Jones, and it has significant support from Andrew Lloyd Webber. He is the president of the school has funded it to the tune of millions of pounds in the past. I've been working on a sort of series of stories about the culture and climate at drama schools for the past few months, and that's been looking at misconduct, sexual misconduct, bullying, harassment, discrimination within these, you know, institutions which are factories for world-class acting talent. And my investigative work took me to ArtsEd, and it's sort of been held up as an example of a school which is experiencing particular difficulty at the moment. And there is a lot of anger and unease about the principal at this school, a woman called Julie Spencer. I've spoken to more than 20 people who have had, you know, direct interactions with Spencer, and she has been accused of bullying and misconduct, and generally of keeping, creating an unsafe space for students. Now, the school strongly refutes those allegations and says that it has worked to create a better environment for those students over the past few years.
And have you had more people coming out of the woodwork since the story dropped?
Yeah, I've not had a response to a story quite like it, to be honest. I've written lots of sensitive pieces in the past and involved pieces, but I had more than 50 people get in contact with me after we published, all with fresh allegations, which we are examining.
Well, you can catch up with the story at deadline.com. Now, the Culture, Media and Sports Select Committee have been holding an inquiry into high-end TV and film production in the UK. The aim is to understand what tax breaks can do to impact the wider economy. Jake, Amazon were quite bullish in their submission, weren't they?
Yeah, we're right at the start of this process now. The Culture Select Committee has been inviting written submissions and has just started publishing some of them before oral evidence, which we'll see over the next few weeks, I should imagine. It's been really welcomed by the industry, this inquiry, and you can see that in the level of response that they've had. I don't think they've published every submission, and there are tens of them. I mean, I've never seen so many for a parliamentary inquiry. And we're just sort of getting a flavour of where they see the industry going over the next few years. And it's very rare you hear from companies like Amazon talking specifically about the UK. It's quite unusual, and their submission is definitely bullish. They want to see the UK preserved as a really attractive place to house their productions, like the new Lord of the Rings series, which they've just shot in the UK. But they're saying that the market is hyper competitive, and the UK could lose its advantage at any point to other territories, and it needs to make sure that the incentives are there for big studios to carry on making shows here in the UK.
They want some of that government cash. Ella, 92% of the spend was from foreign investment, according to the BFI. And I guess, as we've seen with the strike, that can have a real impact on people's lives. Is there anything the government can do to make the industry more secure, or is this just keeping the cash flowing?
I was wondering what the other territories were. I was quite curious what Amazon was kind of obliquely referring to, that were making themselves more attractive, and what that looks like, and whether it is that kind of those the workforce, and kind of, because there is a bit of a drain on that in terms of, I think this is also kind of tied up with the strikes, is that it's kind of made some people reconsider, is this like a viable area
to sort of skills and talent,
skills, yeah, talent, tech as well,
right?
And whether that is something. And I think obviously money.
Did you see money. The stat that Warner Brothers submitted about the Barbie bounce?
Oh, I hadn't seen this.
Did you see this, Jake? Apparently, Barbie contributed over 80
yes.
million in direct spend to the local economy and created 685 jobs during its production in the UK. It is surprising how much of an impact a TV show or a film can have. But they're sort of like mini multinationals, aren't they? You know, things that are spending 50, 60 million pounds. It's a lot of cash to come into the country.
The Barbie bounce is a great phrase. Well done, Matt. I think I saw someone on Twitter saying, "Oh, Barbie pays a tax," which is, you know, which was also fun. Barbie was an absolute phenomenon, and we are seeing it in the numbers. And it just goes to show how important the creative industries are to the UK economy. The government says that it recognises that, and I'm sure they'll be watching this inquiry very closely.
Well, from one digital streamer to another, urgent questions have been raised about Apple in the US after lawmakers there expressed concern over the cancellation of Jon Stewart's Apple TV show last month. Ella, what's the issue with this one?
Well, I think from my very surface level understanding, it's that kind of, you know, you want your shows to be making headlines, but not anything that's too controversial and that reflects back on them. So, and especially when the US relationship with China is strained, shall we say.
So this was Jon Stewart was sort of caught saying to his staff that it was sort of cancelled because they weren't very comfortable about some of the stories, particularly about China or places that maybe Apple need to keep sweet.
Mm. Yeah, I think obviously all of these kinds of Apple and companies like that are always looking at potential markets that they want to go into. And so if that was kind of going to come across and maybe alienate that a huge market, again, coming down to money, then that could be problematic for them.
Jake, it's not the first time that a Hollywood studio would have some issues with China. Is this an edict from Apple, or was it just something that, not maybe a bit more than conclusions being jumped to, but it wasn't as if Tim Cook sent a memo saying no mentions of China, or did he?
Well, I don't know. If I had that memo, I would be writing a story right now rather than speaking to you, because it would be gold dust. But it's no. I mean, look, Apple hasn't commented officially and rarely does, to be honest. It's a very tight-lipped company at the best of times. What we do know is that they take a very careful approach to commissioning. They are very considered in the shows and the films that they invest in. And we know that Tim Cook takes a keen interest in what is coming out of Apple TV Plus. And look, it wouldn't surprise me if they are looking at shows like Jon Stewart's and weighing it up very carefully in terms of the benefits that it provides subscribers versus any potential issues that it creates in what is, you know, not just a key market in terms of consumers, but clearly a lot of Apple's technology comes from China and production capability. And therefore, this is a really delicate issue.
It's one of those things where, I mean, the show hasn't done that well. It hasn't really kind of cut across the world like The Daily Show did. There's a bit of me that thinks, is this Jon Stewart sort of hedging his bets slightly about the future of the program? It's like, oh, it's editorial implications, whereas maybe just the show was probably on the way out anyway.
Mm. Yeah, I can't say I've watched it because I don't have Apple TV Plus. And maybe that's the thing, is that it kind of segmented. It's not going out to like as big an audience.
It's created some amazing viral moments on Twitter specifically. In fact, I think that's the main way I've consumed it. Yeah, you've got these fabulous interrogations where Jon Stewart pulls apart American politicians and does what he does best. And, you know, it'll be a shame if we lost that because this show isn't being made anymore.
So last week we talked about James Corden and his new podcast. Now, Jamie Lang from Made in Chelsea, he's got some podcast ambitions too. Obviously a prolific podcaster, but his own podcast network, Jampot, has signed to UTA. Ella, I mean, talent-run podcasts, there's lots out there, but very few have sort of become networks. I was sort of thinking maybe Rob Beckett and Josh Widdicombe, they've got kind of Keep It Light. I don't know if there's any others. Do you think this is good for him to try and turn himself into a bit of a studio?
I was thinking about what the benefits are for both sides, and I guess a kind of parallel I would see, it slightly different, but I'm going to go for it anyway, is Elizabeth Day going with Sony Music and Entertainment.
Okay.
And she was previously independently kind of produced and did all of it herself, and that actually going with that network gives her, what she was saying at the IAB podcast up front was, you know, the promotion, the marketing, and that kind of force behind her. And maybe that's what Jamie Lang's thinking when he's got multiple podcasts and he's now with this talent agency, that it kind of as a strength in numbers kind of thing.
I mean, podcasting, it's a bit of a tougher market than it was a year or two ago. Jake, this does give him scale, doesn't it? It gives him more fingers in more pies if he's responsible for more shows, a lot of which are kind of with the sort of Jamie Lang cinematic universe of characters from Made in Chelsea and similar shows.
But why not? I mean, if it works, if there is an audience for those reality TV stars, I mean, they would probably bristle at that moniker. It's constructed reality, isn't it? but that's what they are fundamentally. And I think that, you know, Jamie Lang is clearly a bit of an entrepreneur. You know, he runs his sweet company, Candy Kittens. And I think he's the heir to McVitie's, or what, like, he's got some connection to the McVitie's dynasty. So this clearly runs in his blood. And, we're seeing a lot of British producers sign up with big American agents in the podcasting world. This feels like kind of the next step in that. And he, I mean, look, whatever you think of Made in Chelsea and Jamie Lang, he's clearly good talent, and audiences resonate with his style. That's for sure.
Strictly Come Dancing finalist as well.
Very important.
Yeah, that's massively important.
If he's got all the biscuit money, why is he taking all of our podcast cash? Anyway, we'll ponder that. We'll have to take a break. We'll see you after this.
My Top 10 TV is a new podcast that invites a special guest each week to walk through their ultimate Top 10 TV list. Crime shows, comedies, dramas, game shows, reality, and so much more. Each list is unique. So far, Boyd Hilton, Hugo Rifkin, Lauren Morris, Kellyanne Taylor, and this week, the media podcast host Matt Deegan have compiled their ultimate list. You can send in your own list and we'll read them out on the show. My Top 10 TV. Get it now, wherever you get your podcasts.
My Top 10 TV podcast is a You're on Mute original production.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Welcome back. Ella and Jake are here with me. We've been doing some top fact-checking about this McVitie's stuff and Jamie Lang that we talked about before the break. Jamie is the great-great-grandson of Sir Alexander Grant, 1st Baronet, who in 1892 invented the McVitie's digestive biscuit. He has since said, this is Jamie, not the dead baronet, I'm not heir to anything. People always talk about this. I don't know where this has come from. So either it's secret biscuit money, or maybe we've jumped to conclusions and he does need to run his own podcast network. All cleared up. Both Channel 4 and the BBC have been talking up commissions this week. The Beeb's content chief, Charlotte Moore, was at the Belfast Media Festival, championing Blue Light and other Northern Irish productions. And Ian Katz off of Channel 4 has said his team are picking up the pace on commissioning. Jake, would that be the feeling of freelancers, that they've picked up the pace?
No, is the short answer. Freelancers and producers are, I mean, it's quite difficult. I was trying to summarize this before coming on the show, but it's very difficult to articulate the level of anger there is in the UK market at the moment about Channel 4. Producers are absolutely furious with what's going on there at the moment. They don't feel like they're being communicated to properly. They think the channel is not spending its money efficiently. In fact, it's not spending money at all, really. I, you know, a lot of people would deny that there is much commissioning spend at all at the moment at Channel 4. Shows are being moved from this year to next year, and now they're being moved from next year to 2025. There is a feeling that Channel 4 is desperate to turn a surplus this year in what has been a really difficult year in terms of the ad market. And there is suspicion among producers that it is doing that for political reasons. The political reasons being that, obviously, Channel 4 made a big play of its sustainability as part of its argument against privatisation. And if it posts a loss in its first year since its future was secured, then that the optics of that aren't particularly great. So there's this theory doing the round among producers that it's so desperate, scrambling to post the surplus that these decisions are having an impact on others. And there's a sort of general sense that it should break the glass on its revolving credit facility, this £75 million credit facility that it has. But, I mean, that's clearly not going to happen. And I would say increasingly there's sort of an overwhelming sense that producers want regime change at Channel 4. They think it needs a creative renewal. They want to see a new chief executive. They want to see a new chief content officer. There's no indication that that's going to happen anytime soon. There's been waves of speculation about Alex Mahon and Ian Katz's future. But for now, they're both staying put. And, you know, there's an argument that says that they should, because Channel 4 is in a tight spot, and it wouldn't be great for their legacies if they jump ship now.
There is that danger, isn't there, that trying to look good for government could cause trouble for their for them ongoing. Also, that a lot of them had lock-ins, didn't they, over this period, which obviously the government thought at one point they were going to kind of put them up for sale. So I guess that'll expire at some point too. So it'd be interesting if the confluence of that feeling from the sector meeting their contractual changes prompt some change, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, look, Channel 4 will argue that, well, it would certainly reject the allegation that this is politically motivated. They would say that this is just cyclical ad market difficulties. There was some optimism over the summer that things would improve in the second half of this year. All indications suggest that that is not happening, that the ad market is not bouncing back in the way that some broadcasters hoped it might. So you're in this situation where does that leave Channel 4? I mean, if things are not improving and commissioning is still incredibly slow, producers are obviously going to be really frustrated. And the level of frustration is palpable.
BBC journalists agreed on Tuesday to end a months-long clash over job cuts. This comes after the BBC announced in October it would slash nearly 140 local radio jobs. Ella, what's been happening with this?
Yeah, so it was kind of part of that move to go more digital and share all of this programming across different local radio stations. And so you wouldn't need to use as many like producers, presenters, etc.
Well, no one's really happy about
No one would be happy about that.
But what have the unions sort
and
of...
the unions, so what the unions were really trying to argue for is arguing against those kind of compulsory redundancies and pausing of like the local sharing of local news bulletins, because that's the main reason people listen to local radio, is you want your local weather, traffic, travel and news. And then income protection as well, because then you just won't be left high and dry. So that was those are the few sticking points in the reason why they were calling for strike action, and part of the agreement that I think 70% of NUJ members that voted agreed on this deal.
I mean, Jake, it's been quite a tough time for the teams and BBC Local Radio, and also it's just dragged on a huge amount of time.
Yeah.
It's all been negative. Is this a little bit of positivity in this story? Does this mean the BBC can sort of kind of get on with their plans, and that this is the last sort of argument that they faced?
I mean, it's been an incredibly grueling dispute. You know, the first strikes took place in March, but the arguments over whether this is the right plan stretch back well beyond that. I do think it's a good thing that this is that, you know, there's some agreement now. You know, the NUJ have, National Union of Journalists, have talked about safeguards for jobs and income protection for members. So look, those are clearly positive things. But I really do think the jury is out on whether this has been the right decision by the BBC. The industrial action is over, but the argument over whether this is the right plan will continue, I think. And talking about local radio, but this is the BBC's strategy overall. They are taking money out of traditional broadcasting and putting it into digital. So this is, you know, this dispute, it could be portentous to, you know, future disputes. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see industrial action in other areas across the BBC. I mean, this was the first major strike at the BBC since 2010, and it could signify others. And then there's the other thing, which is audiences. You know, audiences are still unhappy about these changes. There was a piece in The Observer over the weekend from Tara Condon, which set out really well all the various issues around the country. You know, a listener boycott in Kent, you know, complaints about scheduling changes, you know, Ofcom concerns about a lack of transparency about the way these things are being communicated. So this is far from done.
Ofcom have sort of ignored a lot of it, and you could argue haven't even entirely followed the rules that they should be following in looking into BBC changes. They seem to have woken up a little bit over the past few weeks, whether that's political pressure or other pressure on them. So I think there is kind of more to this story still to come. I think the listener side is interesting. Most of that is driven by listeners losing like their favourite presenters, and is sort of less about, you know, localization, regionalization. And I would still imagine the vast majority of listeners don't even hear that on air, but they have lost a lot of people that they enjoyed listening to. So I think there's all of that sort of still to come. I mean, every time I look at it, and I've been through a lot of these in commercial radio, commercial radio changes happen very, very quickly. And if you had to do horrible things, you sort of did them sort of within a week or two, sometimes all on the same day, where they're rolling out changes in regions, region by region. So it's that kind of constant drumbeat of another beloved breakfast show presenter has said goodbye or got mean on social media. So I think a lot of it's just been handled incredibly badly. But again, the story continues to roll on because the changes are just taking so long to happen.
The BBC can't win, can it? Because if it moved quickly and was sacking people all in one go, you know, it would be accused of being like ridiculously ruthless and regarding broadcasting legacies all over the country. And so I do have some sympathy with the BBC. It finds it very difficult to make cuts, but it's not got a lot of choice because its funding has been frozen and therefore, you know, has fallen in real terms. And, you know, these difficult decisions are only going to become more, they're only going to become more regular as things move forward.
I mean, Ella, there's kind of a local media challenge in this as well, isn't there? The local newspapers face kind of similar cuts or changes. Commercial radio has changed a lot of how they operate. I mean, the local media landscape
is so different. And just to go to your point, Jake, about what you're saying, the BBC can't get it right or wrong, they kind of lose either way. It's like when Ken Bruce left to go to Bauer, and they said, oh, this is your last show, and that felt really brutal after he'd been there for 37 years, and it was all, and he wasn't even kind of given like proper sort of time to wrap everything up. So that I think is an example of maybe where the opposite happened, and they were kind of maybe a bit too hasty. As for local papers, it is interesting, like Reach, NewsQuest are the two biggest news kind of publishers, and Reach's revenues down 6%. I think NewsQuest in an interview today on Press Gazette, was the CEO was saying that their revenues for last year were up 3%, but this year were down 3%. And actually, that is stability. That's a big win for them. It is really challenging, and especially when Google, Facebook, their attitude towards news
has shifted, and that's shifted.
Is really shifted. Meta is deprecating news, and you know, saying that it doesn't add to their platform. It's only 3% of people's time on the platform. And a story that my colleague Jack covered this week was that a Columbia research study found that Google and Meta would owe publishers $12 billion. And that's just in the US, if they paid them the fair value of what they bring to their platforms and things like that, which Google and Meta obviously refuted in very strong terms.
Yeah, it was interesting. Also, Adam Mosseri, the boss of Instagram and Threads, was saying, I'm not that bothered about news being on Threads. And that's a big shift to what they've done previously. Right, I think we've just got enough time for the media quiz. This week, it's entitled All Publicity is Good Publicity. I'll give you a media stat from the week, and you tell me if it's a good news story or a bad news story for the brand in question. Best of three, and an excellent unfair advantage to Ella, who has no delay because she's in the studio. You've got to buzz in with your name if you think you know the answer. So Jake, you'll say...
Jake. No, I did that on purpose. I mouth Jake.
And Ella, you'll say...
Ella.
Let's play All Publicity is Good Publicity. Right, question number one. Disney Plus's Barb rating of 27.3 million. Oh, Jake's buzzed in. Good news or bad news?
Well, I mean, I should know the answer to this because I wrote the story. So I mean, I think it's good news because it was their best ever week. Well, their best week of the year, certainly. And their best week as far as Barb records go back. Which is
yes, that's correct. It's the best since Barb started reporting audience research and audience reach figures for streaming services a year ago. So it's good news for Disney. Do you expect the numbers to go up or down over the next year?
I think we're probably at peak Disney. Maybe. I mean, look, they'll all get a bump over Christmas because they always do. With people at home watching streaming services and on their new devices. But yeah, I mean, look, it sort of depends what content they've got on. I think
they've got Colleen Rooney right now.
Exactly. I think so. That, you know, the Colleen. I don't think there's a coincidence there, right? I think the Colleen Rooney documentary really resonated with the UK viewers, and therefore they've had an increase in audience as a result of that. And it's the same with Netflix. They had the David Beckham documentary. Lo and behold, UK viewers, you know, flocked to Netflix.
Ella, are you a Disney Plus subscriber?
I am. I got it initially in the pandemic because I was going to watch... I watched all of the Star Wars and all the spin-offs with a friend. But what I find with the David Beckham and the Colleen Rooney content on Netflix and Disney Plus is that the appeal, especially for David Beckham, actually is not just the football fans. It's not just the gossip, wag kind of fans for the Agatha Christie. It's wider than that. And so most of the people that seem to like the David Beckham series in particular so much are not football fans in any way, shape or form, and which just fascinates me.
I think it's got a good chance, but I think all the streaming services are going to have to work harder to retain all their subscribers. Okay, point to you, Jake. Question number two. Good news or bad news? UK TV exports of 1.85 billion.
Ella.
Yeah.
So
good news or bad news?
I think good news is its highest ever. But I think next year, to preface it, would be next year probably not so good.
Yes, you're right. It's at the highest level. It's up 22% on the previous year.
I think also just to add to that the US was the biggest market for exports, but it was only up 3% year on year. So there was, because I wrote the story.
Do we know where else that stuff's going to?
It's quite interesting that Germany and Spain... Poland, Italy all had more than 20% growth year on year. But these export figures, they only have them going back to 2017. And so it did obviously have a massive dip in the pandemic, and as you'd expect. But I think Asia was a big area for growth. There are a few other kind of... They're trying to figure out what genres particularly do well, because at the moment it's like scripted drama, but... Yeah.
But also you've got two kind of mega companies in ITV Studios and BBC Studios mm-hmm. that can drive a lot of this mm-hmm. as well now. And finally, question number three, a drop to listens of 10% in Q4. Good news or bad news?
Ella.
Well,
it depends.
Tell us why it depends.
So this is about the iOS 17 update, which impacts podcast listening. And so this would affect, specifically referring to Acast's listens.
Yeah, so they issued a report, didn't they, that their listens were down. And
it was in their quarterly earnings, and it was something that Ross Adams, the CEO, specifically called out and referred to. And it kind of to reassure people, like, listens will go down in the short term, but in the long term, this is good for the industry. Mm. It will mean more accurate sort of representation of consumer behavior. This is better for advertisers. This is good for measurement. And I like that positive spin, but I think actually talking to other people in the market, they were quite positive about what it means for measurement and actually accurately knowing what people's podcast behavior is.
This is like Apple, this is iOS, it sort of unsubscribes you if you don't listen and sort of the
and
changes.
And doesn't download automatically.
Yes. I think the timings of it are quite interesting. I think Pod News wrote an article saying maybe not, he wasn't entirely correct with what he was saying, but it was pretty close. Mm-hmm. I guess at podnews.net, find out the details there. Jake, it's interesting, isn't it, about those download numbers. The sector's still quite early days with how it reports on this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, to say something completely anodyne, I mean, we know how massive podcasts are. I guess it's got if that translates into revenue, then that's surely a good thing looking ahead, no?
Absolutely. I mean, better figures gives more confidence and then more money hopefully will come into the market. And maybe sponsor the media podcast. It's always an option. Well, congratulations, Ella. A win on your first time. Beginner's luck. We'll see if you can do that again another time when you come back. Thank you to you both. Thanks, Jake. Thanks, Ella. Where can people keep up with you and your work, Ella?
So on the Media Leader, I am the audio and out-of-home reporter on mostly. Not that we don't cover other media. We have newsletters. We also have a wonderful slate of events if you want to come to any of those. Newsletters daily and twice a day on Mondays and Fridays.
TheMediaLeader.com?
TheMediaLeader.com. I should know that, yeah.
Good.
We'll redirect you. It's fine.
And Jake, how can people keep up with your writing?
I'm on Deadline.com and I'm going to plug my Blue Sky. I've not really posted, but it's at Jake Cantor.
But with a lot of journalists on Blue Sky. I feel that all the journalists might end up talking to themselves on Blue Sky whilst the rest of us are on Threads.
Yeah, I mean, what's wrong with that?
Thank you both. And that's it from us today at the London Podcast Studios. Remember, you can get 25% off your first booking when you use the code MEDIAPOD at thelondonpodcaststudios.com. That's MEDIAPOD at thelondonpodcaststudios.com for 25% off. And if you're new to the show, why not hit follow and get us in your ears all year round? Do it in the app you're listening to right now, or go to podfollow.com/themediapodcast. My name is Matt Deegan. The producer was Matt Hill, with support from Maya Cedar Lund. It was a Rethink Audio production, and I'll see you next week.